Welcome to a special edition of the Bulwark Podcast. I'm Charlie Sykes. It is Thursday, and most of us have spent the entire day immersed in the 400-plus page Mueller report, even redacted. It is a lot to process. And, of course, we want to go to somebody who is one of our resident experts, a Bulwark contributor, a law professor, a contributor to CBS News, Kim Whaley, who joins us. Thanks so much, Kim. I appreciate it very much.
Delighted to be here, Charlie.
Well, let's start at the beginning. No, not really at the beginning. Let's start with Bill Barr's very, I thought, really odd press conference this morning, at which he tried to make, he was pre-spinning the report, including arguing that the report would show that the president, well, the president was sincerely angry when he was doing all these obstructive things. This is what he had to say.
And as the special counsel's report acknowledges, there is substantial evidence to show that the president was frustrated and angered by his sincere belief that the investigation was undermining his presidency, propelled by his political opponents, and fueled by illegal leaks.
Okay, Kim, I just thought that was a truly bizarre thing for the Attorney General of the United States to essentially suggest that maybe the President of the United States was too emotional to control his actions, including attacking, intimidating witnesses, attempting to fire the special counsel, and all the other things that are listed in this report. So I guess my first question would be is, you know, why do you think Bill Barr held that press conference this morning? What was he thinking?
Well, I think it has to do with, in my view, an inaccurate point of view as far as what the position and role is of the Attorney General of the United States. The Attorney General is a top prosecutor, and I think there are some people, someone like Robert Mueller himself, who would not have given that press conference. Would he either said, listen, the document speaks for itself, I'm just here to find the facts and determine if it's a thumbs up, thumbs down, you all draw whatever other conclusions you want, or if a prosecutor was going to do more because of the extraordinary circumstances, I think a more even-handed approach would have made sense. There's evidence on both sides. I'll let the American people decide in the political process, because that's really the place that presidents get graded, essentially. And he didn't do that. And I thought, I mean, I think his point with respect to the president's feelings was trying to basically undermine the intent element of obstruction of justice. But as Mr. Barr writes in very painstaking, careful detail as a matter of law, endeavoring to obstruct justice and taking actions that are likely to interfere with investigation, those count. So telling your White House counsel to fire the prosecutor in charge, that is Robert Mueller, I would think that would satisfy the endeavoring to take steps likely to actually interfere with an investigation, that is, to completely end the investigation. The other, and I can talk about why I think Mueller didn't conclude obstruction.
Well, I want to get to that. In a moment. Yeah, go ahead.
But the other problem I took away from Barr's kind of, you know, hurt feelings position was it's almost validated this idea of witch hunt, this idea that the investigation was politically motivated. I think he used those words. We have, you know, dozens of indictments, and we have a universal understanding. No one is disputing that an adverse foreign power attacked our electoral process. That is not a witch hunt. That is not a hoax. And I just think it's really unfortunate that the Attorney General chose to, even in defending the president, validate that point of view, which is really distorted and wrong.
Yeah, well, I'm not the lawyer here, but I'll look at this from the political point of view. You know, clearly there's been an attempt to pre-spin this report. I think that they probably understood how damaging the details of this report would be, the narrative would be. And so they wanted to set what the narrative was going to be by spinning it. But Bill Barr, who's had this very solid reputation, to come out and essentially throw himself on the hand grenade by giving that press conference, at first I thought, as I was listening to it, I actually heard, I think it was Chuck Todd who says, well, this is work. This strategy is actually effective because they have effectively now neutralized the Mueller report. And I thought that's very likely true. However, then an hour and a half later, this report comes out. And I don't know whether you had the same reaction that I did, because I dove right into the obstruction section. I thought it was far more damaging to Trump than I was expecting. I was prepared to be underwhelmed by it. I thought it was absolutely devastating. I think it just lays out this, you know, extraordinary, you know, tale of lies and corruption, providing a very clear roadmap to the president's attempts to obstruct the investigation. And really, it read to me like an invitation to Congress to open impeachment proceedings. So, again, if he thought he was going to blunt it, and maybe I'm wrong about this because he got his hour and a half of the news cycle, but it strikes me as very ineffective. So, do you want to start with obstruction, or do you want to start with the conspiracy part?
Well, let's pick up with obstruction since you know, introduced it, and that is why then, because I read it as well. I mean, there are Barr himself said there's 10 episodes that are listed as obstruction. Yeah. Mueller goes into it in painstaking detail. And as I said, the standard is very broad. He cites the Supreme Court and lower federal courts. The idea is it doesn't matter, you know, if you actually are covering up for collusion. That does kind of bear on motive if you're persuading a jury. But we don't want people, you know, intentionally interfering with the criminal justice process, and the president's in charge. So why then didn't Robert Mueller say, there was obstruction?
Yes.
If there's this, really, I think one look at it is an avalanche of episodes that show that he wanted to end the investigation. That's kind of on its face obstruction. And I think we're back to the sort of now infamous 2010 memorandum produced, or excuse me, 2001 Bill Clinton Justice Department memorandum saying that you can't indict a sitting president.
Right.
It's the gift that keeps on giving. And there's this nuanced paragraph where, let me break it down, where basically Robert Mueller says, and Rod Rosenstein has said this publicly, the Justice Department is not in the business of going around saying people committed crimes if they can't put their money where their mouth is. If they can't prove it in court, you move on. And that is very typical of a prosecutor. Lots of bad guys walk because they just don't have the evidence. They don't have the authority from their bosses. Whatever it is, they let, you know, the person goes free. And basically what Robert Mueller is saying, so in a typical situation, we would prosecute, and that person would get an opportunity at trial to vindicate themselves. Because we cannot prosecute a president, a sitting president, we can't give
right.
Donald Trump the opportunity to vindicate himself. And even if he said this, and this is, I made this point for months now, and others have, I'm not the only one, other legal experts have said, you could just file an indictment under seal, and then it would toll the statute of limitations. He said, we're not going to do that because at the end of the day, it'll leak. So we're still putting Donald Trump in this unfair position where he's essentially indicted, but he's not given the opportunity to defend himself. But as a matter of our constitutional democracy and separation of powers, what Barr has done, you know, by sort of not punting this to the political process in a neutral way, is insulate the office of the presidency from any kind of accountability.
Any kind of accountability. Yeah.
And I went back, Charlie, and read his June 2018 19-page memo to the White House where he gets into his theories of obstruction of justice, and it's kind of like, duh, why didn't we expect this? I mean, he basically anticipates, without any, I think, first-hand knowledge, what Mueller's view of obstruction was going to be, which is actually, I think, not inconsistent with what the law is, and says you can't, you know, presidents are, you know, the boss of the Justice Department. They are, he says at one point, it's a one-man executive branch. It is just the president. So it's another way, that's his constitutional viewpoint, and Republicans and Democrats, we're now imposing this on the American public for the future.
That is,
is the presidency.
So this now goes to the public. It goes to Congress. Let's go back to what he actually said here, because Barr comes out and says that the president had completely cooperated with the investigation, had given them everything they want. What I wrote in the Bulwark is that spin didn't even survive even the most cursory reading of the actual report, which said that Trump, these are direct quotes now, engaged in efforts to curtail the special counsel's investigation and prevent the disclosure of evidence to it, including through public and private contacts with potential witnesses. There's so much here. Many of the president's acts directed at witnesses, including discouragement of cooperation with the government and suggestions of possible future pardons, occurred in public view. But it goes on to say, no principle of law excludes public acts from the scope of obstruction statutes. If the likely effect of the acts is to intimidate witnesses or alter their testimony, the justice system's integrity is equally threatened. Our investigation found multiple acts by the president that were capable of exerting undue influence over investigations. The incidents were often carried out through one-on-one meetings in which the president sought to use his official power outside of official channels. They basically also found that they had been lied to by a number of his associates, and those lies materially impaired the investigation. And one of my favorite lines of all, the president's efforts to influence the investigation were mostly unsuccessful, but that is largely because the persons who surrounded the president declined to carry out orders or accede to his request. So we could go through all of the different elements of this. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, goes through the Rush investigation, the firing of Jim Comey, his attempts to fire the special counsel, his attempts to have Jeff Sessions unrecuse himself, his conduct toward Michael Cohen and toward Paul Manafort. But I guess as a layperson, I'm looking at this thinking, if this is not Donald Trump, the sitting president of the United States, is there any way that the facts laid out in this report would not be more than enough evidence to bring charges of obstruction of justice against Joe Schmo or Charlie Sykes, the CEO of Sykes Enterprises, or anybody else who behaved in this way?
I think that, as I said before, that's what Mueller is essentially saying.
Yeah.
If this were a regular person, they would be charged and they would have an opportunity to defend themselves. But because this is the president, he can't, because the Justice Department is basically not allowing it. Therefore, we're not going to do it.
Okay.
And that's, I think, and it's absolutely astonishing. You have to ask yourself, okay, does this mean the president is when it comes to obstructing justice? I think the answer is yes, because it's hard to anticipate, okay, what set of facts would satisfy this standard that Mr. Carr set forth? And I think maybe his answer is none, because he is the Department of Justice, because he is the executive branch. And to me, as a constitutional law professor, that sounds a lot like an imperial presidency, which is exactly why our founding fathers fought and died for our liberty.
Okay, now obviously the other argument that the Bill Barr has been making and that appears to be getting some traction in Trump world is that, well, whatever he did, it can't be obstruction of justice because there was no underlying crime. Now, very clearly, Mueller did not buy that. He said, look, there's lots of reasons for the president. The president had lots of motives to interfere in this investigation. He says the evidence does indicate that an FBI investigation would uncover facts about the campaign and the president personally, that the president could have understood to be crimes or that would give rise to personal and political concerns. But address that whole question of whether or not the lack of an underlying crime wipes away the possibility of obstruction of justice.
So as a matter of law, that is incorrect. So even if you were going to sue someone for negligence, you slip and fall at Starbucks and you want to sue them, you have to show duty, breach, causation, damages. In this instance, you do not have to show that when you're trying to interfere with in a criminal context, you want to interfere with an investigation, you don't have to show that you're trying to cover up for a crime. That's not one of the elements. If you are just trying to basically intimidate witnesses because you have a personal vendetta against the prosecutor, even if you never did anything wrong, you just think the guy's a jerk, that can still be obstruction. I think the nuance here is, and Mueller says that, Mueller almost responds specifically to the Barr 2018 memo and says, listen, you don't need to prove an underlying crime. The wrinkle is that, okay, if he didn't want to cover up collusion, why then was he trying to call off the investigation? And I think, Charlie, you just gave us a small sliver of the many reasons in the document for why he wanted to call off the investigation. He thought it was going to hurt his presidency. He had things to hide, even if it weren't crimes. There were embarrassing information. There were lots of contacts with Russia, and he's not the only one who lied about Russia publicly. Other people lied, or people are going to jail. So that's, I think, a piece that Barr was not entirely forthcoming, or at least I should say entirely clear about as a matter of law.
Barr or Mueller?
I would say Barr.
Oh, okay.
When Barr sort of suggested in his five-page letter, listen, we don't have any underlying crime. Mueller picks up on that and says it bears on motive, sure, but you don't need to prove that. And I haven't gotten through all of the pages and pages and pages on obstruction of justice, but we have lots of such circumstances. He directed his White House counsel to fire the person that was investigating him after he knew that he was being investigated, that he was not off the hook. He told the people in the White House to not disclose emails regarding the June 9th Trump Tower meeting at which his son and his son-in-law and his campaign manager were expecting to get adverse information on his political rival. I mean, we can go on with clearly he didn't want Mueller's investigation to go forward, and he took lots of steps to stop it. That is, I think, classic obstruction of justice. That doesn't mean, when I say classic, it fits the elements. That doesn't mean in this particular case it makes sense for a prosecutor to prosecute. And that's what I think Mr. Mueller decided. He decided, you know what, I'm also not going to make that determination in a document because I'm a stand-up guy, and that's not fair.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple.
Not gonna put my money where the mouth is. Yeah,
couple of things really jumped out at me that he went out of his way to suggest that Trump could actually still face criminal charges after he leaves office, and points out
that
the Office of Legal Counsel has decided that a sitting president cannot be prosecuted. But then he says, but it recognizes that a criminal investigation during the president's term. The investigation during the term is permissible, and the opinion also recognizes that a president does not have immunity after he leaves office. Okay, but now let's talk about it, because I agree with you that if, in fact, Congress does nothing with this, then quite literally the president becomes above the law. That's why the language, and there's a lot of language in this report from Mueller to Congress, telling Congress what it can do, including this passage on page 8 of the second volume. We concluded that Congress has the authority to prohibit a president's corrupt use of his authority in order to protect the integrity of the administration of justice. The conclusion that Congress may apply the obstruction laws to the president's corrupt exercise of the powers of office accords with our constitutional system of checks and balances and the principle that no person is above the law. I don't know, Kim, that sounds to me like a very clear invitation to Congress to step in on this.
I think, you know, I don't know more personally, but my understanding is he's a rule of law guy. And what does that mean? It means everybody gets a boss in this country. And if you can't indict a president, it has to be a political solution. There are two ways for that. One is through impeachment, and both Presidents Nixon and President Clinton in their articles of impeachment asked what was in their obstruction. Mm-hmm. So I think he's saying, listen, historically, this is fair game for Congress. But if Congress doesn't do that, the other option is November 2020. And I think that his point is, listen, American public, if you don't reelect him, then the criminal justice system will kick in. So the November 2020 election is not important just because we have to decide who our next president is. It's important for the overall separation of powers and the notion of an increasingly a powerful presidency. Do we really want a president who is above the law? And guess what? People on the right might get a Democrat. And they're going to use whoever's in that office will use the powers of the presidency as they accumulate. That baton gets handed off to the next person.
Okay, now let's shift to the first part of this report. Of course, this all began with the Russia investigation. And very clearly, they were not able to establish the elements of a criminal conspiracy. But there is a ton of information about all of the context that went back and forth between the Russians and the Trump campaign. And I thought it was interesting and very telling that that even Attorney General Barr made a distinction between the hacking that the Russians had done, which would be criminal, and the question of dissemination. And the distinction that he was making in his press conference seemed to be that while the hacking was criminal, that the dissemination did not really violate American law, and therefore, no matter really what involvement the Trump campaign or anybody else had with the dissemination of that WikiLeaks material, that did not constitute a violation of law, which again reminds us how narrow the remit was for this investigation.
Sure. So I mean, he might be right about that, and there are, of course, First Amendment implications with that as well. You know, we don't want reporters getting information that even if it was not properly obtained, it was stolen, it was leaked, something like that, that they can somehow be prosecuted for disseminating that. And so that raises a lot of, bigger issues, but the legal issues, ethical issues, things like that. But I think the bottom line here is the report obviously makes very clear the Russians made a lot of efforts to help get Trump elected, reached out to the campaign many, many times, and the campaign accepted that help. Now, was there a meeting of the minds? Was there an actual agreement to work together? That's what conspiracy is. And the other piece that I think Barr was misleading is when he said there was no collusion. He said that this morning. Mueller makes a point in his report, and I'm sure that you saw this, of saying this is not a conclusion that there's no collusion. Hmm. Let me put it another way. Hmm. There can be no conspiracy and still be collusion. Collusion is a colloquial term. Collusion is what it means to you and to me. Collusion could mean, listen, the bad guys, the Russians, tried to help me win, and I accepted it, even though they did it in ways that probably were shady, and they're not down for the American people. Their interests are not the American people. That, in a colloquial sense, could be collusion, and that could be something that Congress cares about. And I don't think Barr needed and should have taken the extra step and said, by the way, there's no collusion. Conspiracy is different. It requires an agreement. But let me just posit some alternative universe where when the Trump campaign had the bad guys come to them and say, hey, listen, look at the dirt, look at the stuff we have. They said, no, no, no. We want to do this in a clean way. Go away, Russia. And we're going to call the FBI because we think this is a problem. Right. I would say that's what we want in the people in our elected office. That's the kind of integrity, or at least in that direction. And the report is the opposite of that. The facts in the report are troubling in that regard.
One of the interesting little tidbits in this report also was that Trump, as we know, answered written questions on the Russia-related topics or some of the Russian-related topics, but we learned today, did not agree to provide any answers, including written answers, to questions about obstruction of justice or any of the events during his presidential transition. And then, of course, Mueller explains why they didn't subpoena him. But again, we've discussed this before. In retrospect, did Mueller make the right decision to let Trump off the hook without either an in-person interview or, as we now find out, not even written questions when it comes to the question of obstruction of justice?
Listen, Mueller already, I think, is getting some criticism from legal analysts for not doing that. What he concludes, at least from my, not careful reading, I just didn't have the time, careful reading of the report, is that we had plenty of evidence of intent. We know why he took all of these steps. He didn't want the investigation going forward. And I would also suspect that Trump would have said what he thought was going to be best for his interests, even if it wasn't accurate. I don't know how much that would have moved the ball forward. If Mr. Mueller thought he wasn't telling the truth, then do we have a perjury process? I mean, I don't think that would have shifted his conclusion that even if we find obstruction, we can't indict him, and I'm not going to publicly malign him if he doesn't have an opportunity to defend himself. And to your point on Congress, right? So Congress, clearly the Constitution anticipates an impeachment process. How does that work? The House essentially issues the equivalent of a congressional indictment. It's like indictment has crimes listed, potential crimes. An impeachment has impeachable offenses. They are not crimes. They're lower than that. Then the whole thing goes to the Senate for a trial, and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court resides over the trial. He's the trial judge. So I think what Mueller is essentially saying is, or could be saying, is if that trial is going to happen, if Mr. Trump is going to get his day in court to vindicate himself, that's the process, because my hands are tied.
I agree. And so this creates this dilemma. You probably saw Steny Hoyer, the number two Democrat in the House, has already issued a statement basically saying, yeah, we're not interested in going ahead with impeachment. And frankly, from a political point of view, I think that's a sound position. I think it's not in the Democrats' interest right now to get tied up in impeachment. However, as I think you've been laying out, from a constitutional perspective, Congress really does have an obligation to now follow up, whether it is through impeachment, but certainly through oversight. There are other alternatives to impeachment, including the possibility of, there's no question about it. They have to have hearings. They have to have Bob Mueller testify, perhaps a censure resolution. But there's no way that they can simply say, let's move on.
No, that would be a gross abdication of their constitutional prerogative. And I think Steny Hoyer is right. Just like a prosecutor isn't going to bring a case, charge someone if they can't win, they're not going to do it. I don't think Congress, which is the equivalent of the congressional trial, it should bring the case if they can't win it. And they clearly don't have the votes in the Senate to actually impeach him. But I do think this kind of airing, both through the Mueller report and through whatever additional leads Congress is going to do to keep that political pressure, so that when voters go to the ballot booth in November, they have the facts. We did not have the facts in 2016. The president, we did not know that he was negotiating with Russia for a Trump Tower. Some people say that doesn't matter, he's a businessman, but he didn't tell the truth. And when I go to buy a used car, I want to know where the kinks are, so I can make a determination as if it's worth my while, or if I'm buying a house to get a new roof. I want to know that. We all understand that as common sense. And the way our electoral system works, there are not FBI agents who do background checks on members of Congress or the president. The way we find out the bad stuff is through the political process, and we have to assume that hopefully people will tell the truth, and if not, it comes out. And I think that's what we're going to have to see through the Congress in the coming months.
So did anything surprise you reading this report today?
You know, I can't say anything surprised me, but it does, as a constitutional law professor, and I'll just mention my book on the Constitution for Regular People comes out June 25th, that it sort of lays out how people should think about the Constitution and write common sense. It was very disheartening for me to think, okay, yeah, just to see this, as you mentioned, this laying out in painstaking, you know, kind of astonishing detail, facts that really are problematic, and wondering, are we going to continue with the public narrative of a black and white, either no collusion or full exoneration, or he goes to jail? The fact is, it's very, very gray. And I think as a country, we need to start talking about the gray areas, because the gray areas are what are reality. And they matter. It's not all or nothing. Barr's comments suggested it was all or nothing. And that was disheartening to me.
And now, see, I actually had the opposite reaction to it, was that I was very surprised by, first of all, how lucid and clear the writing was. I was pleasantly surprised by that, and how strong the language was, particularly on obstruction of justice. But also now we're in the at a stage where, quite frankly, we should not just look at this as lawyers, but look at it as citizens. And that's where you get into that gray area. I think there's been a sort of a tendency to hope that the lawyers would somehow make these decisions for us, that that Bob Mueller would punch the ticket so that we didn't have to do some of the messy stuff. But now it does go into the political environment, and we have to make these moral judgments. And these moral judgments, these ethical judgments, these prudential judgments are perhaps going to be different. Well, they are going to be different than the standards of criminal justice. Now, the question that might be disheartening is whether Americans are up for that. Whether or not they will step up to their role as citizens, and we're just going to find out. Hey, Kim.
Well, part of that depends on the facts. Coming out, but sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Kim, I know you've had a long day. We've all had a long day. Tomorrow's going to be a long day. I really appreciate at the end of the day you taking some time to talk with us about this rather extraordinary document.
Always a pleasure, Charlie. Always a pleasure to do the deep dive with you. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, and thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bulwark Podcast. I'm Charlie Sykes. We will be back tomorrow, and we're going to do this all over again. Because there is so much that we have not been able to absorb. And we'll talk about the spin. We'll talk about the reaction. We'll talk about what comes next. Thanks for joining us.